I hear John's typing angrily.
Oh, sorry, I was on Instagram. Okay, I'll get off.
You're typing on Instagram?
Well, I didn't say I was good at it.
Oh.
Now, Tumblr would have made more sense.
Tumblr would have made more sense.
Or YouTube.
If you were looking at Instagram, the sound was more like...
No.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people.
Right.
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one.
Quarter pounder with cheese in France, Mickey? What? Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly sacrifice that my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success? Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak. And I'm your host, Dave.
And John.
And JD.
That's going to be your thing now, isn't it? That funny little pause.
Yes, it's my trademark belated breath.
Game of Thrones spoilers! Sorry, I'm trying.
We'll get there.
We're not that far yet.
I know, but it just came out. Sorry.
We talking about the Instagram thing again?
Oh, God, please, no.
So, John, how are you doing? You seem a little agitated tonight.
I do. Okay. Well, maybe it's because I have a bottle of water here and not alcohol. That could be a problem.
Oh, there's actual water in your water?
Yeah. It's not Everclear. So,
did you forget to go to the store or something? Or
no. Just got distracted. My mom called. I after what, an hour and a half, I got three sentences in, and when she hung up, I had to come back up here to get ready for this, and I forgot.
Surprised it didn't motivate you to definitely get the Everclear.
Yeah, well, you know, I should have, but again, I was too busy trying to get a word in edgewise. Mm-hmm. Love you, Mom. Anyway, so.
Yes, because she listens every week, doesn't she?
I don't know.
My mom doesn't listen. She's dead.
I did. Oh.
Harsh.
Yeah, I go there.
Oh, my God.
She would have laughed. It's cool.
Yeah. So, I don't know. JD and I may have to talk about the Game of Thrones thing because
we will discuss who plays the Game of Thrones.
Well, yeah, we're going to get to that. That's going to be our main topic.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I also did see in the meantime. I don't know. Did we talk about Detective Pikachu? How did I see this weekend?
Yeah, we talked about it last week. About what you liked.
What the hell? I forget what I saw this weekend then.
John
Jesus.
Wick, Chapter 3.
Oh, right.
Ooh, I'm going on Thursday.
So no spoilers. Just thumbs up, thumbs down.
Big thumbs up for the doggies. Dog lovers will love this.
I do know one spoiler. And it's not even a spoiler, really. A friend of mine sent me a message. Apparently, they've already thumbs up a John Wick Chapter 4.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Go ahead.
No, it ends setting that up. And it ends setting that up in a way that makes John Wick 4, it's consider John Wick 4 World War 3. It's going. I have no idea how they're going to top it, but they're going to have to given the setup. So go ahead, Jimmy.
No, I was saying it seems like John Wick has become like the best action movie pure action movie franchise of this decade.
It has. Three did not disappoint. I can't remember the last time there was a series of movies, a a movie franchise like this that lasted three movies without a really bad one.
Huh. Okay. I don't know.
No, yeah. Seriously. Yeah, I mean, you think about it, maybe Star Wars, but even then, three had the Ewoks. I mean, so...
Hey, I like the Ewoks. No, I was going to say, not since the 80s have we gotten that.
What was in the 80s? Three good action movies? Mm.
Yeah, three, like, eight of the same, you know, character and all that. I mean, I can't remember. So,
Die Hard's pretty good, but they don't get till three till 94.
That's a Christmas movie.
Not Die Hard 3. Die Hard 3, controversial opinion, my first one of the night. Die Hard 3 might be a better movie than Die Hard.
That's possible. Plot.
Yeah. Got a much better plot.
No, I give you that. I give you that. But no, anybody listening, you if you're wondering whether you should go see John Wick 3, if you're worried that you might be disappointed, you are not going to be disappointed. And if you are a dog or a horse fan, you are going to love it.
Horse. Hmm. He's an assassin who kills because he loves dogs. Like, what's not to love about that?
I know, right? Because somebody messed with his dog, and now he's just... But there are dogs in this, and that's all I'm going to say. But just let's just say that it is awesome, and they are very good doggies.
It's the symbolism, because it was the last thing that his wife left him. You right. know, it's more than just the dog, but yes.
Well, also because he is Baba Yaga. He is basically the last thing men see before they die.
Oh, that's such a cool comment. I'm stealing that.
Well, that's what, I mean, that's
what they call him.
His tagline, yeah. He is the Baba Yaga, the last thing men see when they die.
So good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you had mentioned Detective Pikachu, which I was supposed to go to this weekend with my son.
I'm 2 weeks behind.
And he was like, I don't feel up to it. So, yes, we didn't go. I know.
17-year-olds, man.
Exactly. It's going to be out of the theater by the time he wants to go see it.
Yeah, don't let that happen. You have to see the theater.
Yeah, or it's going to be, you know, Far From Home is out. And it's like, well, I'm sorry. That wins over Detective Pikachu every time.
True. But isn't there something else next weekend? Like, this whole month is just, like, chock full.
I think there's something else next weekend. I think it's Aladdin.
Godzilla comes out, too.
Godzilla. There you go. Godzilla's... Well, okay, so that's 2 weekends from now. But yeah, I wouldn't consider Brightburn. I don't know about Brightburn. You know, I mean,
I want to see it, but I don't know if I want to go to the theater to see it. You know,
see, I like the big stuff on the big screen though. Like, I feel like all that destruction needs to be viewed. I don't know.
No, maybe I'm wrong. I'm with you on that. I just I don't know. I have to think about it. And JD, you did one of your first Facebook Live videos.
I did. There was so, like, Game of Thrones. As a writer, they tell you, like independent writers specifically, they tell you to push these things and do these Facebook Lives. And I've literally dragged my feet on it for a full year. But as I'm getting close to starting to release these books, so I figured, well, I gotta start turning up my social media game. So I decided, I got Andy down for a nap and I had some time. So I decided to just, well, what the hell? Let's talk about Game of Thrones.
Well, you could pull a Ben Goldsmith and do it in the shower.
That'd be too weird.
Well, it works for him for some reason.
As a video professional, which you really can't tell watching my first Facebook live stream, I don't think that would be it would hurt me to bring my camera where there's flowing water.
It's funny, like, I heard this from someone before, and I'm like, I guess it's true. If you notice, there's a lot of YouTubers that do videos in their car.
Yeah.
And it's because it's an isolated space. It usually, you know, doesn't look bad, and it's got a lot of natural light coming in.
Yeah, and they can hit the gas when somebody calls the police on them.
Sounds decent, too. It muffles a lot of the sound. It keeps the sound nice and tight.
Right.
Most cars are designed that way, yeah.
But it's... I think it's almost cliche at this point to do the stream in the car. Like, it is such a thing that I didn't want to do that. I thought about it, but I decided to go in my, my dingy basement instead.
Well, it was a dungeon for the Game of Thrones talk. Right?
I didn't even think about that. Yes, that's it was on brand. But yeah, it was fun. I'm trying to do like two a week as we lead up to the release of the first book.
Yeah. Makes me wonder if I should start doing that.
So, yeah, I think you should. And I think that there's a lot of people that record podcasts on YouTube where they actually have it more of a video discussion. It's an angle we could go with if we decide to, you know, something new.
Well, you'd have to put an animation where I would be, because you don't want to drive our viewership down.
You notice neither one of us is arguing.
I know, exactly. Thank you.
I was looking for a joke and I couldn't find one. It was too depressing.
That is the joke.
But yeah, I'll keep doing them. Actually, on my writer page, that's the most engagement I've had in a post in months. So
yeah,
it clearly worked.
Cool. All right. And I guess we can move on to social media madness.
Do we have to?
I only got a couple this week. Again, I'm trying to keep it light, keep it simple. So we talked about Jon Favreau had said he was up to directing another Marvel movie. And Ryan B. had said he thinks he would be better at a solo hero rather than a team like the X-Men or Fantastic Four, possibly Nova or Captain America with Sam. I don't know if I disagree with that. Because I think... go ahead.
I don't know. Like, the Jungle Book and stuff like that. Isn't he doing The Lion King? That's a lot of balancing of characters in those.
Yes, but again, maybe. Like, The Lion King, The Jungle Book is definitely a very personal story, though. You know, the first Iron Man, even though there's other characters in there, I don't know. Maybe that's what people are looking at. The Iron Man movies he did, and they're like, they don't know if he can handle a team.
He does have more of a career than just two movies.
This is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And then Chef Ben said that Gambit, starring Josh Holloway, it's a post-Katrina New Orleans gritty. He's using his powers to help dig folk out of the destruction. Aren't we getting a Gambit starring Channing Tatum?
I don't know if that's actually going to happen. Now, yeah. I'm from the 90s, so I don't understand the love of Gambit.
A lot of people don't.
I don't, yeah. I read those X-Men books, and he's never been a good, compelling solo character.
He could, though. That's the problem. Like, if you look at, I pull it to Dungeons & Dragons, you know, if you look at any of the books that were ever written in the setting of Dungeons & Dragons, all the best ones always have, like, one of their main characters is the rogue, because the rogue is always the most interesting. He's the one where you don't know what he's going to do. You know, you can't count on him to be good when he should be good and bad when he could do bad things in order to do good. So it makes it more interesting. So I can see, on the one hand, I can see that. But on the other hand, I've never seen a good characterization of Gambit like that.
Well, I think you just described Wolverine.
Yeah, I did. Gambit was supposed to be like that, but every time they throw him up on, he was like that in the cartoons, the early cartoons, but every time they brought him to the big screen, he's kind of sucked.
Well, I've only done it once, but I mean, like, that's Wolverine though. Like, that's Wolverine seeing the X-Men. Like, Gambit just comes off to me as like, if you think Wolverine is cool, wait till you see this Cajun Wolverine.
But he's not. His powers are completely different. He's not going to.
No, but it's the person, the personality. It's the rogue.
Yeah.
The same thing. And Wolverine is a better character.
Well, like I said, if they had written a good Gambit film or a good Gambit story, it would work. But you need somebody who's going to be able to use that point of view and that setting to its best effect, and nobody's been able to do that yet. Nobody's really done it.
I don't know. I don't think bow staffs and blowing up cards make that compelling of a character.
I think it draws better than it would look in real life. Like a Jim Lee drawing of Gambit with that flaming card looks pretty badass. But I think you see it in real life, and it looks kind of stupid.
Yeah. It's weak visually in live action.
That's what they said about a talking raccoon.
You're not wrong. I'll concede that point.
You never know. If Marvel does it, it's got a chance.
Right? We shall see. I don't know if that's, I mean, that was just a listener's wish, not necessarily something's going to happen. And the other thing that we talked about, our love of movies and whatnot, talked a little bit about Avatar and, is it a good movie or not? And, we had a few people who chimed in. I asked if anyone had memorable scenes. Chris Stivers, at Acorn Zombie, when the home tree is blown up, that was freaking hilarious.
Notice he said hilarious and not horrifying or disturbing. It was, or sad. It was hilarious.
Yes. Coyote Meow, Meow Boy.
Oh boy.
Who's at Loud Acid, said, the ponytail sex was one heck of a weird concept. And the fact that nobody just saw it once in cinemas, but multiple times.
I feel like those are incomplete concepts.
Yes.
But bro's going by Loud Acid, so you know.
Yeah.
He got that done, so good on him for that.
Gorilla Brain Podcast said it's Dances with Wolves with blue aliens.
That's about right.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Fair, yeah.
Jason Lennox, former guest of the show, saw it one time in theaters, one of the most disappointing films I have ever seen, and really turned me off to James Cameron as a filmmaker. Never had any desire to see it again, and never have.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then Sid.
What the hell is this gif?
You never saw Avatar.
Yeah, we've talked about that 3 weeks in a row, which leads me to my next topic of conversation after that. But what is that?
So, in the movie, their ponytails coming off their heads are not just hair. They have like these tentacles that come out of it. And when they have like sex.
Amounted something.
First when they're having sex, they interjoin them with the opposite sex, right? It's kind of, I guess, like a full melding of spirits or whatever. And then when they're flying these creatures, they also connect so that they can control the creatures.
So they basically pump the creatures while they fly them?
That's pretty much everyone's takeaway.
Yeah. The more time goes on, the more I'm standing by this indifference I have to this movie. Which, by the way, got me some flack from our good friend Mark Ellis at So Wizard.
Wait, hold on. One last tweet.
Oh, sorry.
Next, the cat thing said, I feel like it's more setting than story. The story is bland and basically just a Pocahontas rehash. The setting is interesting, though, and it would be nice to have better story occur in it. So, and I think that's a very fair estimate of the movie. Yeah, so what did Mark Ellis say?
He was like, he came at me, and I'm like, what did I do this time? Because I say stupid things on the show all the time. It's kind of what I do. And I'd ask him, like, are you mad at me because I didn't see Avatar? Because I did the Iron Man 3 thing. And he kind of took me to task for having never seen Avatar and was like, everyone hates the movie because it's the cool thing to say now. And I just kind of had to nod along because I never saw the movie. But I mean, remember when I said that nobody is impassioned about Avatar? Clearly I was wrong. Mark Ellis, super impassioned about Avatar.
Yes. But he just
heard his own argument because it's the cool thing to do now. Why would it be the cool thing to do if everybody liked it? To hate it, you know?
Now send your hate tweet to John.
I understand, like, okay, so Mark Ellis, he obviously listens every week. Oh, sorry about that.
I thought that was him for a second. I was like, whoa!
No, I accidentally opened something on my phone and the video started playing right away. he obviously listens to the show, and he watches a lot of movies. He's really a cinephile, you know, and he does Oscar predictions and all this stuff, and he writes movie reviews for their website. And I will give him, there is the concept of, like, the Nickelback thing, right? Like, they're platinum-selling record artists, but it's cool to hate on them. You know? Suck. Because it's cool. So it's the same. He's equating it's the same kind of concept. However, I think a lot of people I know have always said this from the time the movie came out. It is just Pocahontas with blue aliens. There's nothing special about that movie. There's no one who's ever seen it that's been like, oh, you remember this scene, or there's that confrontation between these two characters that's so cool. Like, there's nothing like that in the movie. And I think part of the problem is the fact that it is a mostly computer animated movie, and it has a little bit of the Uncanny Valley feel to it. You don't attach to these characters because they're animated. Well,
it's the uncanny feely.
Good one. That is a good one, John. So yeah. I mean, that's my take on it. Marcellus, you know, don't get mad at us because we have different opinions.
Oh, well, that's part of the fun. Please continue getting mad at us. We gotta keep the show alive. I'm amazed at the amount of time we've dedicated to a 3-year-old movie the last 3 weeks. Or a 10-year-old movie. I got my numbers crossed.
Well, if you started watching it 10 years ago, then you would have only finished it 3 years ago. So it's a very long movie.
John, I'm fired this week.
All right. I was thinking of saving this to the end, but since you both are so dying to talk about it, Game of Thrones came to an end this week.
Oh my god.
So here before we talk about the final episode, there are two petitions flying around. The first one was started by fans and currently has over 1 million signatures on it. And that is them petitioning HBO to redo the entire 8th season.
You know what? The best meme that I've seen about this, and I don't know if this was from The Onion or not, but it was a picture of the cast, and the caption was, D&D game finishes 3 years without DM.
All right. Hold on a second. I'm not sure where I kind of see where you're going with that. Did you know that the writers of the final episode started their own petition for the fans to write their own show? Shut up.
Is that legit? I thought that was an Onion article.
No, that's real.
No, that's a real thing they did. That was not an Onion article. Okay, so let's, I'm going to lay my cards out. I am a cursory fan. I watched the first season. And then I kind of stopped watching it. My wife, daughter, and son-in-law are huge fans, so I know basically everything about the show from them. And I happened to walk in at the key moment of the final episode and watched it a little bit and then went back to bed.
Good for you.
My wife was watching it. So first we'll start with John, since you seem to have the most to say at the moment about it. What did you think of how the show ended?
Well, I mean, I think, this podcast is spoiler and full of spoilers. I don't know. How does that meme go? Anyway, so spoilers ahead.
Okay.
So I think personally that they pulled one of those things where they knew what the ending was supposed to be. They didn't exactly know how to get there, so they gave Daenerys a personality transplant in order to make her do. I mean, there were kind of reasons that they were kind of shoehorning in, but the problem is that over the last 7 seasons, she had always tried to do the right thing She always tried to do so. Oh my god. All right, fine, JD. Go ahead.
Good people don't crucify people. Good people don't have dragons melt and engulf them in fire. Like, we cheered for her because we thought she was against the quote unquote bad guys. And every chance she had to be a good person, she didn't take it. She was constantly laying her enemies to waste. And I'm just as guilty of cheering for her because she's against the bad guys. But when she did it to the people of King's Landing, you're like, well, that's out of character. But it isn't. She did it all the time. Like, ever since she took power, it's been nothing but smiting enemies left and right. This time it was against people that we thought were innocent, though.
Well, they were innocent. They were civilians.
Yeah, no, I know. I agree with that. They were innocent. That's why it bugged people. But she was doing it the whole time.
But like, her whole story. She took the slave owners. Okay. No, right. They were slave owners.
For sure. Right. They're the bad guys. So her actions are justified.
You know,
so she can crucify them.
My son-in-law said the same thing, JD, that like, he didn't think it was out of character. Like, he's like, no, that was her all along. It's just her ratcheting up her own personality to 10 at the end there.
Yeah. Because she's paranoid, because, you get close to a goal, you're about to achieve it, and it's falling apart before you. And,
what was falling apart, though? She had won.
Jon Snow had legitimate claim to the title.
Okay, so that equates to laying weight.
She was strengthening. She was trying to show that she is in charge because the army followed Jon, not her. They were loyal to Jon Snow. Her people were loyal to her. That whole thing was a civil war ready to break at any moment.
Well, we knew that. I mean,
yeah. Like, but that's the thing, is that it bothered her, because she says it bothers her. And John's swearing, I don't want to be the king, I don't want to be the king. And it's like, and again, because I got to watch the whole season in one sitting, so it was all, like, jam-packed into my brain. But people kept saying, well, it's not her, but it totally is her. Like, from the time she has lulls about her brother getting the gold poured over his head.
Oh, yeah.
Until the end, like, this is her. She's just as vicious, but you're right. She always was killing people that we as an audience could say, they're the bad guys. Yeah, they deserve it. They're the bad guys. And just like Tyrion says, like every move she takes, she becomes more and more emboldened by her actions. Yep, the bad guys did it. The people in Marine, they were trying to kill us and they're rotten and we had to do what we had to do. Like that kept happening, right? The whole time. The difference is that now we saw her do it to innocent people. Like, it's the total actions of a tyrant. Like, I thought it worked really well. Steve Extra had a great thing on his Facebook page about having been like, oh, but she's pretty.
I also kind of feel that's, and correct me if I'm wrong, JD, because you're the published writer, of the group, but I always feel like that's a writing trope as well. Like, the character that people might be rooting for that you don't want them to root for because you know they're going to die. You have them, reveal their true self in the end. And so that you're not as upset when they bite it.
It could be. I didn't think about it like that. Here we go back to the same as always. It's pro wrestling. It's the heel turn. Like, officially she becomes bad. But the best villains, again, this is Michael Hayes, not me. The greatest villains are the ones that believe they're justified in their actions.
Right.
Oh, yeah. The best villains are the ones that think they're doing good. And I was talking to a friend of mine today, and I used the Anakin Skywalker comparison. These Jedi are so awful and so evil, they have to be wiped out. And these little children, I have to kill them to save them from what they're going to become.
Yep.
Because it's the only thing left. And that's kind of where Daenerys is to me at the end. And I think that it's better executed than Star Wars was, because like we saw her character go forward. And when it's happening, it's very easy to think, man, this just came out of nowhere. But when you go back and look at the steps, which the writers had Tyrion actually do, they actually have him go plot by plot point to show, yeah, she's been doing this for 8 years and everybody's been cool with it. So that would be my counter to that. And I've heard that argument a ton, John, and I'm not discrediting it. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying it was there.
So what I watched from what I saw was Jon had just killed Daenerys. The dragon then melts the Iron Throne. So, I mean, that's obviously the pinnacle scene of the entire series, right? That's breaking the circle.
Breaking the wheel.
Breaking the wheel. Again, I'm only a tangential fan. And then of course you have the council scene right after that. And, everyone's favorite character, Tyrion, basically pointing out that Bram should be the king. And Bram's like, well, I don't want it. And then it's like, well, that's why you should be the king.
That's one thing that bothers me because, okay, you make him king. He's the three-eyed raven. Most of the time, he can barely deal with reality. How is he going to deal with running a kingdom?
He's not. That's the whole point. And that's why the whole thing relates to that dragon scene, right? The dragon, what I loved about that scene is the symbol of House Targaryen destroys House Targaryen's greatest monument, the Iron Throne. Like, it's literally the family destroying itself because it's too much. Love that scene. And then at the end, the whole thing was, who's going to sit on the Iron Throne? Who will win the Game of Thrones? It was wrong, right? The Iron Throne was poison. No matter who sits on it, it's going to be the game continues. It's more political intrigue and people killing each other to take the next seat on the Iron Throne. The whole, the wheel is broken. That's the wheel.
Something just even said at one point where, I don't think it was in that episode, but I think it was said in the series at one point where, when you play the Game of Thrones, nobody wins.
Might be. I don't remember. That sounds like a line from the show for sure. But that's what I love about it. Bran don't give a crap about being king. He checks out of the small council meeting. He's like, oh, I'm going to go warg out as the dragon for a while. And now the people who actually care about the realm are running things the way it should be. It shouldn't be who was born into the title should run the world. It should be the people that care and want to see the world prosper that run it.
Okay. I will concede.
Though my wife said she thought it was unfair because he can see the future.
Yeah, I've heard that argument too. I heard someone, when I put that Facebook Live thing, someone actually responded and said, Bran is the ultimate villain because they showed that he can influence the past. And they said that he might have gone back and influenced everything to set it up so he could become king. And I said, oh, that's an interesting theory. Although I think that if he had done that, he'd have been a little bit more despotic when he got to the throne instead of a little bit more meh.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's cool. I like fan theories. That was fun. I wrote one 2 years ago for the site that wound up going absolutely nowhere.
This is true. Yes. It's almost like the fan theory that Snowpiercer is a sequel to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I haven't watched that video yet.
Oh, God.
I haven't had a chance.
You have to watch it. It is crazy how they make it makes sense from what they say. I'm like, oh man. So anyway.
Enough of that. It's over with. It's done. HBO will now have to die or find another Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Thing.
Somebody said this on Twitter too. And I'm like, The Watchmen, it seems like that's what they're setting that up to be, the sequel to Game of Thrones, whether it's going to be popular or not is another story.
Yeah. I'm not feeling that.
I kind of felt like, were they setting up Arya to have a spinoff?
John, what do you think, man?
I thought the actress was tired of playing then. She wanted to go on to other things. Like, they all were just ready to move on now.
Yeah, but you know what? They recast things all the time, and they can do a 10-year jump in the future and have someone a little older play her that looks kind of like her.
And a little taller?
Ooh.
Sorry. Wait, I think Arya is at my door now. No, I don't know. I mean, they could. I mean, basically they've pointed out with a big red arrow saying, hey, there's more to this world that we haven't mentioned, which gives them carte blanche to create another really interesting story about what's going on in the south or west of west or whatever.
West.
Yeah. Well, west, wester than west. I mean.
Yeah.
So it's Westeros. I mean, I don't know. It's just
so we talked.
So
about-
yeah, I mean they have a they have, I mean they have plenty of material. They have a larger world that they could explore. It's, you know, up to them what they're going to do. I don't know. I'm kind of done with it for now, unless they come up with a really good idea.
We shall see. We talked about the show itself. We didn't really talk about the whole implication of, and this is one of those things that's been floating around a lot on the internet lately. The implication of this petition in the sense of, it feels like there's, and you can stop me at any time, either one of you, like a sense of entitlement in the fandom today. And we've talked about this so many times on the show, but I figured we could talk, you know, brush on it again a little bit, where it's like we've reached this level with social media and interaction with the writers and the stars and all this stuff where not only do we feel more connected, but in a way we feel entitled. And when something doesn't turn out the way we want, you know, we feel like we have this right to demand that they change it. You know, they did it, of course, with Last Jedi. Oh, there's a petition to strike it from the canon. And now they're doing it with Game of Thrones season 8. And, you know, I shared a meme on Facebook today where it was from George R. R. Martin quote where he was like, art is not a democracy.
Yes.
So, as the writer, I agree with that to an extent. I read this book a couple years ago called Right to Market by a guy named Chris Fox, who's really good in the indie publishing world and teaching people how to do indie publishing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, a lot of this right to market concept is based on kind of giving the audience what it wants, like embracing certain tropes and then subverting to create a story. Like if you write a military sci-fi book, you got to have a spaceship with a male captain. And like, there's some things that have to be, because that's what the audience wants to see. And that's your chance of being more liked and therefore making more money, is if you play with these tropes and embrace them a little bit. So I think that there's this, and then between like beta readers and ARC teams, and like more than ever, writers are seeking fans' counsel when creating content these days. We rely on like Amazon reviews and YouTube comments. You know, we rely on word of mouth. And part of getting that word of mouth is having people like what you're doing. And the reason why people get so attached to it is because at this point more than ever, fans are invited to become part of the content. Like, it's different now. Like, the world is much more embracing of the nerd of like the nerd aspect, like the geekosphere, if you will. Like we all participate. It's a symbiotic system. But at what point is that fine line where the line between provider and consumer be divided? Like, can the consumer dictate where a story goes? Because I am a believer that if the audience completely dictates where the story goes, they're not going to be satisfied, because they're going to say, who didn't see that coming?
So that makes me think of, okay, we go back 30 years ago, right, where you had your three major networks and your ancillary UHF stations, right? And a lot of stuff was, John likes to call the four quadrant thing, you know, hitting the lowest common denominator to make sure that it's popular to get enough of an audience, because you only have three competitors and you're trying to suck the TV viewing audience away from the three main competitors, right? Like that's,
yep.
And then you have a lot of people who are on the creative side who are now like, we're in a TV renaissance because you've got so many options to consume content now that the creator is more free to not worry about satisfying the four quadrants. They can create the way they want to create, and the audience will the audience who likes that will gravitate to it.
Yeah, and it's both good and bad. On the one side, you get stories you never would have heard of before that actually are great that they came out because they're written well and it's fun to read or watch or whatever. But on the other hand, you get so many of them that finding the good ones is hard.
Not only that, I think that there's a lot more money to be made in embracing an audience, and we don't have to, like, you don't have to shoot for the lowest common denominator anymore. You don't have to be all things to all people. Mm-hmm. And like the days of movies and TV shows being developed by executives who are focus grouping things to try to make it all things to all people are done. Like, that's not the world we live in anymore. But that being said, like John said, there's a negative to that too, is that now that people are more passionate because they're getting better stuff. Like, I don't think you can argue that the quality of TV on these streaming platforms is better. Like, nobody got mad about the, like, maybe you guys will speak to this more than me, but I mean, like, were people this pissed at the end of, like, this, I pissed is the wrong term. Was there this much controversy over the last MASH?
No.
Oh God, no, no, that was like unanimously, but it was handled so well.
Well,
and,
you know what?
And no, for those of you that don't know, MASH is something, is a show from the 70s.
And early 80s.
That's right. It went so long.
You know what, though? I don't know. It's funny. Like, I was one of the few people on planet Earth who didn't watch the final episode of MASH live.
What? You know how many people watched that?
Well, because I was still a young kid in grade school, and my parents said I had to go to bed at bedtime, and it was on past my bedtime. I watched the beginning of it, but then I had to go to bed. So when I got older and finally saw the final episode, I'm like, this is such a departure from the show itself. Yeah. It was odd to me, you know? And I don't know, again, like, looking back on it, it's like, I don't know if everyone loved it. It was an interesting way to end the show, but, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I might have picked a bad example there, but I mean, the point I was trying to make was, I think that when you're trying to be all things to all people, all you do is entertain at a low level. You know, you get a laugh out of it. It's like Big Bang Theory. You get a little laugh and you move on. It doesn't inspire passion.
So,
you know, like the shows these days inspire passion. And when you're passionate about something, you care. Right, and this is people showing that they care.
But I was going to say, even if you go back 5 to 10 years ago, maybe more 10 years ago, like if a show everyone loved all of a sudden started not being what they liked anymore, they just stopped watching it. And then it, you know, eventually went off the air because no one's watching it. Now this is a little different because it's on basic cable. So I don't know if nobody's watching it, does HBO cancel it?
Yes. If no one was watching, HBO would totally cancel because the show costs too much money.
Okay.
It's like they make money on the show. That's why they're able to do the things they do.
Right.
But I think there's like this line where like people are super worked up about it. Like I remember taking to the social media world and being really pissed off at the end of How I Met Your Mother. Like I felt so, no, for real. I felt everyone, so like betrayed. I think a lot of people did by that show, but that was the first time I can remember social media having a direct impact on the finale of a television show. Like, are there a lot of good TV finales? Like, is there a lot of times that you watch a last episode of a show and, like, and you feel like, man, I feel good about that? Like, there's far more, and again, I like the Ghost finale, but I think there's far more misses than hits.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, like, the final episode of Seinfeld. Like,
yeah.
It was one of the dumbest things ever written. It's funny because you mentioned not Game of Thrones, Big Bang Theory, whose final episode was also, this past week. And I am a huge fan of the show, and that's one of those shows where it ended, but it ended where like nothing really happened. Nothing really changed. Like there's something big that happens in the show, but at the end, they're all still together. They're all still living in the same, you know, apartment building and they're all still friends. It was like, so like that just makes me want more episodes, not feel like something completed, you know, but a lot of shows end that way too. So, yeah, I don't know. It's like, but I'm not going to create a petition to say, give me another season of Big Bang Theory because I.
Okay. Yeah. Well, all right. So before I forget, there is actually, you said that, art isn't for the people enjoying it to choose.
It's not a democracy.
It's not a democracy. Well, actually, you're forgetting Bandersnatch. What? On Netflix?
Choose your own adventure movie.
Black Mirror.
Choose your own adventure book. Yeah, and that's still not a democracy. That's just basically playing a video game, but on a TV show or with a choose your own adventure book. It's, you know, a low tech question and answer video game. It's not, you know, there are still predetermined paths that an author created.
Yeah, but you can still do it. You can still end it the way you want. Kind of. For the most part.
I think you might have struck something actually with that, Dave. I think video games might be a reason why people are more amped to get worked up, because they're used to, like, in a video game world, you become the character and you're in control. So it's maybe it could be some of people getting a little bit more invested in characters because of that mentality where you're not just watching people, like, you are in the world yourself.
And you can choose the light side or the bad side.
Right.
You
know, you're invested. Right. Especially a show like this where there's so much going on. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, just being a musician and whatnot. It's like, I understand that art is supposed to be an individual. I mean, and I understand with TVs and movies, there's a lot of people involved to get the vision out, but it's supposed to be an artist's vision of some kind of story or message they want to tell, you know? And so if I create something and put it out there and 40 million people like it, but a million people tell me I need to change it, well, I'm not going to listen to those million people, you know? Obviously, it's not for them. It's for the other 39 million people that enjoyed it.
Hmm. All right. That feels like it's been beaten to death.
Oh, okay. Good. All right. Let's move on to a little news. So we can start with some Marvel news here. Something I think everyone, going back to Avatar, can be happy about. Endgame passes Avatar in domestic box office. So they are now the number two domestic box office movie of all time.
Yay.
Force Awakens still being number one. And yeah, so the last I checked, they're 140 million away from worldwide number one.
They'll make that. I mean,
they probably will make that. I had my doubts a couple weeks ago. No.
Yeah. So, to all those, Avatar lovers that said that Endgame was going to do it, suck it. Anyway.
But in the nicest way possible.
In the nicest way possible. Yes, yes. We're so professional on this show. So yeah, I think it'll do it. My prediction is within the next couple weeks, it'll happen. So I could be wrong, but we shall see. Yeah, cause again, John Wick came out and knocked them off the number one spot. They were still number two, though. You know, that's as long as they stay in the top five, they're making money, right?
Yeah. And it's still in the theater, for crying out loud.
Exactly. So here's something that I know we talked about in Slack, and I don't think we talked about on the podcast. And correct me if I'm wrong. So Kevin Feige says Marvel has future plans to use Mandarin and the Ten Rings.
That would be nice.
Oh, okay.
So, how do you do that without Tony Stark?
not as well.
Oh.
Maybe he can buddy up with Venom.
So one of the guys I worked with said that maybe they'll make him Shang-Chi's father or relate it to him somehow.
Shang-Chi was this child of the Fu Manchu of the Marvel Universe. So, yeah, why not? You can move that over.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, he's saying they have plans. There's something in the works for him. But spoilers, as we all know, our good friend Tony died in Endgame. So, I don't know. I just don't know. It also goes back to people that are fans of the MCU that not necessarily comic book fans don't know the history between the characters in the comics. So they're not going to care, you know, but it's us nerds who get upset when they change stuff like this. So we shall see. We'll keep an eye out to see where that goes. If you guys have ideas of how they could bring them in, let us know. All right, here's an interesting one. Zac Efron is rumored to play Adam Warlock.
Are we sure about that?
I love this.
Of course you do.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the guy's a good actor. And he's a good-looking dude. I mean, Adam Warlock's supposed to be perfect. Like, why are we hating? Why are we hating that? What's wrong? Like, the guy just played Bundy and did, or Ted Bundy, not King Kong, but Ted Bundy, and did a great job playing a serial killer. Like, I think he's got far more chops. Like, this goes to the Robert Pattinson thing too, we're going to talk about in a minute. Like, why do we hate on actors for taking work that we don't like all that much?
Well, I actually don't have any horse in this game. I think it's an okay choice and he'll probably do good. I really don't have anything against him playing this.
In light of what we're going to talk about in a minute, I'm going to say, yeah, I don't have an issue with it either. I don't know.
You're saving yourself for the big argument, aren't you?
No. I agree. I think it's, you can't fault them until you see them in the role. And JD makes an excellent, comment that he's supposed to be the perfect human. So you're going to want somebody who's considered, you know, very attractive to play him. And, you know, he does have chops. He's been in a lot of stuff. It's not like he started acting last week. It's not like he was only in High School Musical and that was it. You know, he's been in a lot of stuff. So we gotta give him a chance. And then the last piece of Marvel news, this popped up last minute, but I figured we should talk about it. Another casting rumor. Charlie Hunnam. Is that how you say
it? Hunnam,
Who is best known for his role in Sons of Anarchy, is in talks to replace Hugh Jackman as Wolverine for the MCU.
That's a tall order. I mean, it really doesn't matter who it is. You're going up against Hugh Jackman, so it's
that just sounds weird, John.
he'll get muscular if he
yeah, but it's not just that. I mean, Hugh Jackman he's just got a presence, you know.
I will say this: I think whoever replaces him is got a hard thing to do. He can't play him the same way Jackman did because then you run that risk of just being compared to him, right?
Yeah,
it's like Ledger taking over after Nicholson played the Joker, and then. Of course, we have Leto taking over after Ledger.
Well, that was definitely a downgrade.
But I'm saying, like, they all approached the character differently, and they were all different takes on the Joker, and it's the only way you can do it. So I think whoever takes over Wolverine's role has to approach it differently. But what it made me realize is, if this rumor has any weight to it, they are already casting the X-Men. So they must have plans for them.
Well, it's just a rumor.
Yeah, but I said, if it has any real weight to it.
Yeah.
So.
We can hope.
I'm okay with this, I guess. Like, I didn't watch Sons of Anarchy, so I'm not familiar with his work enough.
Yeah, neither have I.
Yeah, me either. None of us are biker fans. So if anyone out there listening has watched Sons of Anarchy and are you familiar with his work, what do you think of him playing Wolverine? Do you think it's a good choice? And if not, who do you envision playing him? That's the million-dollar question, I think. All right. And our final piece of tangential Marvel news, because it's related to Disney, who owns them. Disney has now taken full control of Hulu. They rule everything. We're all dead. I mean.
Well, we're next. I mean, you know.
Yeah. So Comcast is your company. That's given away control to the mouse.
Yeah. Disclaimer is that I actually work for Comcast, but Comcast is such a big company that, again, I'll use this same explanation. Asking me what's going on with the streaming and the Hulu deal is like asking a little toe what's going on with one of the ears. I have no freaking clue.
You just realized your new nickname on the show is Little Toe.
Oh, excellent. Awesome. Ooh.
Oh, I like that.
Okay,
it's better than Little Finger, right?
I don't know.
So, but they ditched it. Now Disney owns it. I mean, we've talked about this before. The number of streaming services is getting ridiculous. How our favorite shows are getting sliced up into different streaming services and that we have to pay for all of them to see all of what we want is it's going to get to a point where they're not going to be able to make enough money. They're going to realize that they're going to have to consolidate under, you know, a couple of larger streaming services. And unfortunately, Disney is the only one that seems to have enough content where it could be viable all on its own.
Yeah. It makes me wonder, is Hulu be going to come Disney After Dark?
Like, I was just wondering the same thing.
You know, the more adult stuff that they have that they don't want on Disney Plus, or are they just going to throw it all on Hulu?
Oh, is that where they're going to put the stuff where Minnie shows a little bit of leg? Is that what you're saying?
You make jokes like that, but they now own everything Fox has ever owned. So that's Married with Children. I don't think they want that on Disney Plus.
Well, they also have everything that's on ABC. So it means you're talking stuff like Modern Family and like the Goldbergs. Like that's stuff you're not going to see on Disney Plus, but that's like not necessarily non-family entertainment.
Right. ABC, well, ABC was, I mean, they were an extension of Disney. They right. never showed anything. They kept some of the religious shows and they kept it pretty clean.
That's still network TV.
Right. Yeah.
And also, don't forget, Disney owns Miramax. You know, and there's a lot of movies there that would never go on Disney Plus, but they own them. They might as well put it somewhere.
So I don't think we've reached peak market saturation as far as these streaming apps go. I know we've heard through the grapevine that the DC Universe app should meet an untimely end this year, from what I'm hearing.
Already? Wow.
It's not getting. I mean, like they canceled Swamp Thing. Like it went from an ongoing show to a 10 episode limited series. It doesn't sound like the app is doing great on its own, and that Warner might want to do a Warner Media app.
Well,
platform. So
that ties
they're going to need that stuff.
That actually, it's a good tie into a DC story that I have, so we can pivot to that. Whereas Netflix has announced they will not renew streaming deal with the CW shows. So
that's big.
You know, yeah, all the Arrow and Flash and all those shows, which you now can watch at the end of the season, all fully on Netflix after this season. That's not going to happen anymore, it looks like. They said it's, according to the article, they said it's still up in the air, but as of right now, they're saying they're not going to renew the deal. And it makes me wonder, is that really Netflix is doing, or is that they know Warner Brothers is going to start their own app and they don't want to compete with themselves, so they're just going to let them put those shows on there?
Well, they kind of did that with Marvel, as they took them off knowing that the Disney Plus app was coming.
Right.
And that's the reason why that Netflix has invested so much money into becoming a content creator.
Yeah.
More so than just a provider.
Right.
And in varied markets. I mean, they're creating their own shows that in both like regular, genres like comedy and drama. And they're also like making a lot of headway into the anime market. So, and I'm sure that those aren't the only ones that they've gone into.
I just kind of wonder, I don't know, is Netflix stays numbered?
No, I don't think so. I don't know about numbered. They have to kind of reinvent.
Well, now keep in mind though, I mean, so back in the day, if you wanted to know what movies were playing around you, you would call Movie Phone. Yeah. And Movie Phone was an independent place. You know, somebody started up that company and they found all the phone numbers and they had deals with the theaters and all that. And when the internet came along and they started to do, a lot more business, the the theaters and the company, those bigger companies, they got jealous, wanted to keep all that money for themselves. And so basically Fandango came around, and Fandango is subsidized and was given preferential treatment. And eventually Movie Phone kind of like, you know, kicked the bucket. And that's the way this works. And now we're seeing the same thing. Netflix started all of this. And they built this market, and now everybody's creating their own streams. And as soon as they've got their own streaming service, they're pulling all their stuff off of Netflix. So, you know, if Netflix is smart, this is kind of a different, it's a different scenario, because Netflix, again, they can create their own content and bolster it and make other, there's too many places where they can make agreements and bring more content on. That wasn't the case with Movie Phone. So, I mean, it's up to them. It's up to them to make smart decisions to survive. Whether or not they survive is really up to them at this point.
Yes, we shall see. I think JD's right. It's a time for them to reinvent themselves a little bit. And if they become the first provider of stuff like Bandersnatch and they keep doing stuff like that, you know, that might be a niche that keeps them going, at least for a while.
But that's the thing, though, is I don't think they need, like, they're having success without just, like, the Marvel and the known properties. Like, they're the ones that are creating new things. They have Stranger Things. They have, like, John's right, they're doing a lot of cool stuff in anime. Like, they're on the forefront. They're the big dog right now. And yeah, Disney will, but Disney's gonna challenge them with, like, the home cooking. Like, Disney's gonna be like, this is McDonald's. This is, like, the food you know what it tastes like.
Where
Netflix is gonna say, hey, I'm going to introduce you to some, you know, Asian fusion and blow your mind. Both are going to be really good. They're just going to serve a different, not even different audiences, but just different tastes and different needs.
That is a very apt comparison. I like that. That is awesome. That's exactly what it is.
Maybe. We'll see.
Because I ain't getting rid of Netflix. I need my Stranger Things.
No, yeah, I mean, for me, Netflix and Amazon Prime are two that I'm not getting rid of because I use them all the time. I've also got Hulu, which I've started using now because One Punch Man is on there and a few other things. So, you know, but I still haven't signed up for DC. And that was the other thing you said. You mentioned Batwoman, or did we talk about Batwoman yet? Batwoman
not yet. Is still
okay. Well, Batwoman's going to end up on Warner streaming service. But not DC Universe?
It does not look like that at the moment.
So how does that work? If you're going to DC Universe...
Because the DC Universe is going to... It looks like that's going away. And there's going to be the Warner Brothers Online that's going to suck in all that content.
Well, it's a CW show, so it'll live on the CW.
Right? Well, that's true, too. You can get the CW app. But you know what? The CW app only has, like, the last four episodes.
Right, but you can still watch it, like, as a... You can watch it like old school, just, you know.
Old school? Who does that anymore?
But there's still people. They still exist. Like,
they'll all be dead soon.
Like, you're right. But I mean, like, it's not like you can't watch anywhere. It's going to be difficult to find. Like I said, we're about to have this, like, this battle for the Iron Throne of streaming services.
Basically.
And who's going to win? I don't know.
Whoever has the dragons.
She didn't win.
Oh, that's right. Whoever has the imp.
Whoever has the imp or the three-eyed raven.
Or the three-eyed raven, that's it.
This is sounding like one of those After Dark streaming services.
I'm going to miss that theme song, too.
That was an awesome beat. Yeah.
All right, well, so then let's pivot to Kim's casting news that made the internet explode over the last couple days. Robert Pattinson, it hasn't been confirmed he's actually playing the role yet, but is in the running to play Batman.
Yay.
And the internet went crazy. I actually had somebody send me an article where they were like, well, Warner Brothers denied it. And Warner Brothers didn't deny it. They basically just like said, well, no one's really been cast yet. So it's like they didn't deny he was in talks for it. They were just like, yeah, no one's been cast as Batman yet.
Do you feel like they're just trial ballooning these things? Like, it seems like there's a lot of, we've been reporting or, you know, talking about a lot of this stuff where it's like, yeah, this guy's going to get cast as this. And then a couple of weeks later we hear, well, no, that's really not happening. So it feels like they're trial ballooning a lot of stuff. Like they keep releasing these rumors just to see how they're received, to see whether or not they actually want to go forward with them.
I would say yes, possibly, but at the same time, like, I kind of felt that way with the Jared Leto Joker casting, and then he ended up being...
Well, that's one where they didn't listen to public opinion, and they just went right ahead with it anyway.
But,
hey,
but
remember that time Mr. Mom played Batman?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and, remember that, and then remember became that, the Vulture, and is like one of the best villain...
It doesn't matter.
...character actors
it
of all time.
It doesn't matter. The point is, everyone was like, Mr. Mom, when it happened. You remember that time that guy from Brokeback Mountain got cast as the Joker?
Yeah, and people were pissed about that, too.
Yeah, it's like...
I'm not saying public opinion is great.
On this very podcast, we had a panel discussion about Batfleck and how everyone was PO'd about that, and he ended up being the best thing of those movies.
This is true.
Like, I don't think we should crap on actors for working. And every role requires something different, and every role is a chance to make money, because that's what acting is at the end of the day. It's a job. And dude's got to make a living.
And so is a podcast, and we need to criticize in order to get an audience. And
we make a living?
And I put a post I put on a post on Facebook where it feels like, at least in the modern Batman movies, probably going back to Keaton, the number one thing the actor needs to properly play Batman is to be brooding. And as playing a vampire in Twilight, he's had a lot of practice at brooding, which makes him the ultimate person to play the role.
True.
So, yes, I think it's brilliant casting. You know, and it's like, some people were talking about, oh, he's so skinny. It's like, all these actors were skinny when they were cast, and then they have to bulk up. It's like, it's just, you know, heck, look at Chris Pratt before he played Star-Lord.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, They put him on the Hollywood diet. They get him a nutritionist and a coach. And next thing you know, he's got 50 pounds of muscle on him. It's like, oh, yay. This is wonderful.
Oh yeah. He's a sex symbol now. Huh?
Exactly. There's a lot of women who already think he is a sex symbol. So, and along those lines, there's another, online movement. If this is true, then the Kristen Stewart, fans want her cast as Catwoman.
Okay. Yeah, sure, whatever. I'm sorry, she's one person. I mean, I keep hearing that she's really good, but every time I see her, she's like, yeah. She literally has the acting range of a wooden board. So I don't know. You know,
yeah, everything I've seen her in, she is not a good actress. I'm sorry. I don't know how she got cast in anything. Yeah, I know. And JD's being quiet. Did we lose him? We lost JD.
Oh,
that's why he's being so quiet.
He got upset about the Game of Thrones thing. Bring him back.
All right, boys and girls, it looks like JD has dropped from the call. We don't know what happened. So as good little podcasters, we are going to soldier on without him. And we had just talked about Kristen Stewart. Fans want her to play Catwoman. So,
to which we responded with a thunderous meh.
Yes. So let's just move on real quick. Of course, the CW released their Batwoman trailer for next season.
Which looks good, actually. I'm impressed.
I was greatly confused on many levels by this trailer. And I don't know what's going on in the fact that, like, they had her on the crossover this year. And they've already shown a teaser for the crossover for next year, which is, you know, Crisis. And she was already an established character with her.
Right. So this is it. They're starting with a prequel, and they'll probably
with her. I was about to say with her costume from the a comic accurate costume, very comic accurate costume, which everyone loved. There was, you know, no complaints on how the character was handled at all.
No.
And it just feels like, yeah, like we took 20 steps back. Like she's wearing her cousin's suit as opposed to her own suit. And
well, they're talking about how she became Batwoman, and they need a small origin. It looks like it might be just the first episode that's the origin, and then they'll move on from there.
Possibly, but that's not how they handled Flash. They had his actual origin on Arrow, and then flash forward it to, you know, they had him on an episode of Arrow without his powers, and then they had his origin, and then boom, the show started, and they didn't have to rehash the whole thing. So, yeah. And I understand it's a different character, blah, 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 but it's the same producers, same writers. I just found it odd. So we're going to have to see where this goes. I mean, yeah, obviously the same tropes that all these shows have. She's got her man in the chair, who I don't know who the character is. He's somebody that works at Wayne Tech, who apparently is involved with modifying the suit for her and I guess showing her the technology that Bruce has to fight crime, blah, blah, which I'm tired of the man in the guy in the chair.
Well, just remember that they might move Felicity over. Felicity might go. Is she like done, or is she going to move to another one of the shows?
I don't know. All I know for sure is she's not on Arrow next season. That's a done deal. So, are you caught up on Arrow for the season?
No, I have a couple more episodes. I've been catching up with a whole bunch of other things. So.
Okay. So yeah. We'll see what happens. And then the other trailer that came out was for Batman Hush. This was a series story from the comics that they're bringing to the animation world. For those unfamiliar with the story, it's a former classmate of Bruce's who basically figures out he's Batman, goes on a crime spree, and he's obsessed with Bruce. He ends up getting plastic surgery to look like him. And thus he's able to use his identity to frame him for some stuff. And it's a story that was drawn by Jim Lee. It was one of the first Batman stories he worked on. And it's funny because they had offered him what they call a prestige format to do the book, where it's like, you know, a separate outside of continuity. He's like, no. If I'm going to work on Batman, I want it to be in continuity with all the books. So, yeah, he got, I think it's 2 or 3 issues of Batman to do the story. And, I thought the trailer looked really good. It's same quality as all their other animated stuff. What do you think, John?
Yeah, no, it looks okay. As long as it's not Ninja Batman or whatever, because that was the most horrible thing I've seen in a long time. We should be good. Yeah, it's set in the DC universe after after Flashpoint, the animated Flashpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got not the Bruce Timm Batman, but the successor, the Batman and the Wonder Woman and all that. Actually, this is the same continuity as the, my brain is going flat now. Doomsday just came out.
Yes.
So it's that continuity. And the voice acting's good. The storylines are okay. They've been slowly moving over to the DC universe, the new rebirth, which means that some of the old traits that we like in our characters are coming back, like Wonder Woman not being just a big dumb Amazon again. She's going back to the Bruce, kind of the Bruce Timm side, and you know all these new relationships are going back to where they really should be. So Lois Lane and Superman instead of, well, Diana and Superman. So yeah, I can't wait to see how it comes out.
Yeah, I mean it's I think I've seen pretty much all of their stuff. Cause, you know, it's funny. This, people have said this too, like, Marvel has been killing it in the movies where DC has been killing it in the animated stuff. And
yeah, they've only had like maybe two or three bad ones and everything else has been pretty much top rated.
Yeah. So yeah, it's, we shall see. I'm waiting on bated breath. Hopefully you guys out there will watch it. Let us know what you think. All right. So we are going to wrap up this week on another fine interview, brought to us by our good friend, John. This is from Awesome Con as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is Arthur Sudam. You know him, right? Or Sudam.
Yes. I actually know him. He's, known as the Zombie King in some circles, Marvel Zombies. He was, one of the artists on that book.
He's done a whole bunch of covers.
Yes. And he's very good at anatomy. That's why I think he got the job. Do you have anything to say to set it up?
No, I mean, basically it caught my eye because of all of the, zombie zombie paraphernalia around his tables and all of the pictures, all of the work he did. There were zombie versions of just about everything. When we talked, I found out a lot of interesting things. He comes from a long line of artists, of, you know, people that just are extremely talented. And, we'll let him tell you himself. So, here he is.
So, John O'Grady, SuperheroSpeak.com, and here for Cosmic Geppetto, because one slave driver just wasn't enough, in lieu of Brad Mendelhall. And I am here at AwesomeCon in Washington, D.C. with Arthur Sudam. Sudam? Okay, Sudam. Who has done, is basically all things zombie. And when I say all things zombie, I'm sitting here looking at his table, and there is like literally a zombie version of everything. Zombie babies, zombie Deadpool, which is kind of redundant. There's a Toddy McSpidey zombie. There's a...
the A to Z.
Yeah,
basically. The A to Z of zombies, right.
So now, you were telling me, you are the zombie king, which is actually, you know, on your...
So they say. The little kids gave me that name, actually.
Oh, well...
At these shows.
You get to keep it, I mean...
Yeah, that's okay. It fits, I guess. I think half of it had to do with the fact they couldn't pronounce my name and they couldn't remember my name, so they just started calling me the zombie guy, because my work is actually what prompted the whole zombie phenomenon. It actually was instrumental in getting the Walking Dead sign on TV and then everything else that went along with it.
So how did that work then? I mean, what exactly happened that they saw your work and they like it inspired them and they thought, this looks good enough?
Yeah, it was a little bit different than that. What actually happened was... you know, there was a little known black and white comic series called The Walking Dead that nobody was really reading, and I think had a readership of about 2,000, 3,000 people. And they'd been the owners of the series had been taking around and shopping it up to try to get movies or TV show interest in it. And for 6 years, nobody had any interest in it. They said, "Well, we don't know who you are," meaning the writer, "and nobody likes zombies. Nobody cares a hoot about zombies. Zombies are dead. Zombies aren't hot." And so they all said no to it. That was until the writer, which is Robert Kirkman, and I partnered up on the Marvel Zombies, and that became one of the bestsellers of all time for Marvel. And it started off this trend, and then after that I did two more big zombie series. I did a series called Raise the Dead for Dynamite Entertainment, and then I did Marvel Zombies vs. Army of Darkness for Dynamite Entertainment. And these became bestsellers of all time for all these publishers. That's what started the whole thing. All then all of a sudden, and we were winning every award that came down the pike. Marvel Zombies was winning it. And so all of a sudden, zombies became like the British invasion when the Beatles came over. Everybody just started started a snowball going downhill thing. And everybody started to use zombies and took interest in putting zombie projects out. Plants vs. Zombies became the number one or number two game in the country. Number one was Angry Birds. Number two was Plants vs. Zombies. Yeah,
which I played.
Yeah, okay. And then Brad Pitt went out and bought the rights to World War Z and et cetera, et cetera. As Toyota started putting zombies in their car commercials on TV, the snowball just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So this is what started it all.
So we have you to thank to get rid of those sparkly vampires.
To a large degree, because the thing with Marvel Zombies is people are just buying the book to get the covers. So I was doing all these homages to old classic covers, and the book kept selling out every 2 days, every one, two, 3 days, the entire print run of the book would sell out, and then the publishers would come back to me, being Marvel Comics, ask me to do another cover. Because people were just buying them to get the covers, and they put that on, and that would sell out in 2 days. Then he'd come back to me again. So this just went on and on and on for like five print runs of the series. And then finally, it wasn't until finally after the trade paperback came out that people started reading it, and they were actually able to sit and read the thing from cover to cover from beginning to end, and they realized that, wow, this was a really great story. The writing on it was really fantastic. And I believe that year it won the Spike Award, Scream Award, best comic of the year, best artist of the year, best writer of the year, and it just it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger from there.
So you spawned like all of this, but your family name, the Pseudems, go back pretty far as classically trained.
That's
artists.
Correct. Yeah. I had I have about 40 years. Classical Renaissance drawing, painting, and sculpting training. So I'm really trained to paint religious art, but I come from the East Village. It's kind of there's a little tiny neighborhood there where a lot of pop culture trends seem to come from. Punk rock music, rap music, new wave music, all these fashion trends, all the movements in poetry and music, Bob Dylan, Jimi Hendrix, all this stuff happened in my neighborhood. So I'm just one of those guys that happens to be from that kind of a hotbed of pop culture, I guess. There's something about that neighborhood. I'm not quite sure what it is. I think it's the diversity of it, and it's very bohemian. It's the most bohemian place I've ever seen. So it really is like Beatnikville. We're all beatniks to some degree.
It's a good place to engender creativity.
Yeah. You know? So you're surrounded by other creative people, and so it keeps it fresh on your mind, and every day is a learning experience. And if I had to size it up, I think that's probably how I would do it. But regards to the classic family name, the Pseudems go all the way back to 16th century before this was the United States. They came over from Holland to set up a trading post in North America in the 16th century. The trading post, they fought in the Indian Wars, Hudson River Indian Wars. The trading post ended up becoming New Amsterdam,
okay,
and then New Amsterdam ended up becoming New York. So it was a Dutch. So New York used to be a Dutch colony, and so the Pseudems were part of that Dutch colony. And later on, around the 1800s, at the advent of the Civil War, there were about a dozen painters called the Hudson River Painters who won American fine artist recognition for the first time worldwide. If you recall, it used to be thought that the only good painters come from France, mm-hmm, from Holland, and from Denmark, and from England. But there were no good artists in the Americas. That was until the Hudson River painters came along. And so actually two of those dozen painters were Pseudems. One was James Pseudem and the other one was Henry Pseudem. Fast forward later to around the 1920s, 1915, 1920s, there was another Pseudem named E.H. Pseudem who became known as America's foremost architectural artist. He basically traveled the world, would do a book of drawings of the cities, did the United States, and after he did all the major cities in the United States, he started to move to Europe and South America and the Middle East and do the same thing over there. So I'm the latest Pseudem. Those guys did landscapes and I do zombies.
Well, they're related in a way. One could feed the other. How did you get your start? You're growing up in this place that is basically like Creativity Central.
Right.
And what got you started your family is art, but what got you started down this road?
Two things. What got me started, one is the family, my entire family, they're all in the arts of some sort. Actually, most of them are musicians. So most of them are, tend to be musicians. My father was a country musician. All my uncles and aunts were all bluegrass musicians. And then my mother was a painter, and so she had a paint set around since she wasn't using it and hadn't touched it. Once she started to have kids, she just never touched the paint set again. And I asked her at some point, hey, come on, can I use your paints? And she said, yes. That started me, and that was an oil paint set, so I started fooling around with the oil paints. I had an uncle who actually studied with Norman Rockwell. His name was John Saddam.
And you have a Norman Rockwell here.
I have a tribute. A tribute piece, which I did for the Raise the Dead series to Norman Rockwell. And so that kind of started my formal fine arts studies at about age 8. I inherited that from my aunts. And then when I was old enough to go to college, around 18, 19, I started to go to, there was a school that was a recreation of the school of Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and Raphael. It was the first school of its type in the world. They're called Classical Ateliers. So based on the notes of that trio of artists from Italy, they rebuilt the school. So the first one came out. It ended up being like 4 blocks from my house in New York. So I was fortunate to have access to that school. So that's also what started me on the zombie thing, because the curriculum was 99% anatomy. So it was very similar. Parts of it were very similar to medical school. So we had to go to, we had to work with cadavers all day long. So for 2 years, we had to take them apart, put them back together again. We had to sculpt them. We had to draw them. We had to paint them. And that first school was the New York Academy of Figurative Art. And then from there, I went to the Art Students League, which coincidentally happens to be the school that Norman Rockwell studied at. And I went to that school as well.
And what you took away from that was, zombies.
And I grew up reading comic books. Comic books really got me into the drawing, started me on drawing. Yep. And then, as an artist, once you discover the great works, hopefully, as you're going along in your career, you come across other people's work that that open new doors to you. And so the Norman Rockwell course really did that for me, because it exposed me to all the great illustrators of the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. The list is long. And those guys probably technically had the greatest drawing skills of all time. Some of them, for sure.
Did Roger Corman come into it at all?
No, Roger Corman. Well, I like the movies, so I was watching horror movies, all the Hammer films, all the B and C science fiction films. So I grew up on all that stuff. And in the arts, it's, you are what you eat. And if you're eating film noir and horror movies, it becomes something that you just become very comfortable and very familiar with. So when people when they're looking for somebody to do that kind of work, you become the go-to guy.
And I'm assuming you enjoy it too. I mean,
pardon me?
I'm assuming you enjoy it.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I do love it. Yeah, I love watching them. And I love working on them as well. Yeah.
So you've done, was it the Marvel
Zombies? I did. Yeah. Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash for DC Comics. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I did the Merc with a Mouth series for Marvel Comics. I'm told that's the best-selling Deadpool series of all time.
And the DC one?
My first professional jobs were for DC Comics. When I was in high school, actually, they hired me to start working on their – they used to have these anthology books, horror anthologies. Mm-hmm. They were similar to the Tales from the Crypt books from the EC Comics from the 1950s. And there's one artist there who actually was one of the artists from DC EC Comics named Joe Orlando, and he's the guy that hired us all. He gave us all our work. He hired me, hired Bernie Wrightson, hired Mike Kaluta, hired Michael Golden, hired Alex Nino. Basically, anybody that was really good in the business, Joe's the guy that hired him. Yeah. So he had the eye. We were talking about that a little bit earlier, about having the eye and for talent and not having the eye for talent, and Joe definitely had the eye.
What was like the one that you enjoyed working on the most? Like,
you mean project, zombie project?
Yeah, or any project. I mean, even if it wasn't zombie. I mean, not everything is zombies. But
yeah, well, everything on this table is zombies.
True.
I got you. I don't know if I could pick one, but if I had to pick one, it would probably be the Marvel Zombies.
It was really, really that enjoyable, huh?
Yeah, it really was. Yeah, I love working on this series.
Would they give you wide berth to just?
Yeah, they paid, and that's one of the reasons it was good. And I think that's one of the reasons that the result came out really well was, and it's the same for the writer as well. That they basically they just left us alone to come up with something, and we came up with something great, you know. And so when where there's problems in the arts is when the bean counter is getting there, and they just can't help but interfere with the development of something that has integrity and it's fresh, you know. So
yeah, we were talking about that MCU versus the DCU.
Yeah, yeah.
So well,
they left us alone. I chose my own covers. When I was running out of covers that I was thinking to homage, there was a artist liaison at Marvel Comics that was helping me out with some of the era of comics, Marvel Comics that I was less familiar with, and he would make some recommendations, and then I would choose from what he recommended. And his name was Chris Alo, and the result was a really great project.
Well, and it was very successful. I mean,
it was very successful. John Barber was great because John let us do our thing. John Barber was the editor for Marvel Zombies, and he had a sense of how to get the best work out of the talent, you know, which is basically put guys with great talent together and then kind of leave them alone and let them come up with something that's great. Don't interfere. Yeah.
And it was so good that DC is now trying to copy that. And, you know, that is the greatest form of flattery, right?
And that's what they say.
Yeah.
I've heard that said before.
So we're here at the Awesome Con. I haven't been here before. Have you been here before?
This is my first time here.
Oh, first time? Okay. Yeah. What other cons do you go to?
I'm at one every weekend. And there's so many of them, I can't remember the name of any of them. But every weekend I'm at a show somewhere.
I talk to a lot of the artists, and that's a really grueling type of thing.
It is. It can be grueling. But the two parts of working in the industry as an artist that I like the best. One, I like being alone, locking myself away, and working on the work. Try to come up with something that's worth putting all the work into. So doing the paintings, I really like that. I like writing the stories. Other than that, when the book comes out and you get to hold it in your hand, that's I really like that. Other than that, it's actually like meeting the fans here at the show. So I love it. You know, that's great. I get for me personally, I can't vouch for this for anybody else, but for me personally, I feel like I get my understanding of the business of comic books and of publishing from talking to the fans, because I'm able to basically take an inventory on what they like and why they like it and why they don't like it. And it helps me when I'm psychoanalyzing a design for a painting that I'm doing. So yeah.
That's
informs me.
Perfect. I mean, when you listen to the fans.
I listen to the fans for what they did, what they liked and why they liked it, what they didn't like and why they didn't like it. And I feel that this gives me an informed perspective on when I'm designing my own pictures on what roads not to take and maybe some roads that are a good idea to take. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite form of art? Because you've done there's an Andy Warhol homage to Andy Warhol.
Andy Warhol. We used to go clubbing together back in the late 70s, early 80s. He's from my neighborhood.
Oh, you must have stories. Damn.
That didn't last very long. But for a while, we'd go out clubbing. He was managing a group at the time, a new wave group. So we would go out to, he just saw me at a club one time and he just like picked up on me and asked me that I want to go out to clubs. And I was going to the clubs anyway because I'm a retired musician now. But I used to play and I used to love to go see the wacky, especially in the 1980s, the wacky new wave bands that were around, and they were wacky, really, really, really strange. And so we would go out and we would check the bands out. Yeah.
What'd you play?
I'm a singer-songwriter. I play guitar, bass, and drums as well. I'm a lead guitar player. I did a lot of movie soundtrack work. I composed it. I was a studio musician, so I was being called in all the time to play guitar and sing on other people's tracks, that kind of thing.
So there's literally no point in your life where you weren't creating something.
Something, so, yeah. I mean, I'm in the arts, and when you're in the arts, one art is just opens up, like I was saying, it opens up doors, opens up windows to other things. You step through the door, and before you know it, you're here. You have a foot here. You have a foot over here. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Do you have anything coming up that you can talk about, or even better, that you can't talk about?
Well, I can. Yeah, so I'm working on the DC's version of Marvel Zombies, which is called Deceased.
Right.
And I just turned in the first cover. I'm working on the second one right now.
The cover, which cover for, I forget, Deceased is across a bunch of different properties, right? So
you know more about it than me. Cool. My understanding is there's a book series called Deceased. And I just did issue one. I think it's coming out in the beginning of May. Right. And I'm working on the cover for issue two right now. So I believe I'm doing the whole series. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you talking to us. Where can people find your stuff online?
Under my name. If they type in Arthur Sudam, they can find it online. Just especially on YouTube. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. And we like to end these with a question, and I am so all sorry right. to ask this. How do you measure success?
How do I personally measure success?
Yes.
Hey, that's the first time anybody's ever asked me that. I think for me personally, how I measure success is really if the job you're doing is the job that you love, it's the work that you love, to me that's success. And especially if it just pays the rent and puts the food on the table, and it's the job that you love, to me that's the definition of success for me, whatever the job may be.
Probably a secret to a long life too. You know?
Hopefully.
As long as you enjoy it. Okay. Well, again, I appreciate you coming on. And
my pleasure, man. My pleasure. Good meeting you and good talking with you.
All right. Thanks, Ed.
And
he did a zombie Jay and Silent Bob. That I really like, and Kevin Smith saw it and really liked it as well.
Oh yeah, and he's also, I mean, while I was there, I mean, he had a Norman Rockwell zombies. He had that famous picture of the Fab Four walking across Abbey Lane. He had a zombie version of that. I mean, literally zombie versions of everything.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. Those who know of him, there's some interesting controversies around him, but
well, he was a nice guy when I was there, and
exactly,
and his work is he's just raw talent.
I was gonna say because I had told a couple people we had an interview with him, we were putting on this episode, and they had a couple comments, and I'm like, you know, just be professional, just do an interview, and learn something about him, and that's all that matters, right?
So, yeah, well, I don't know. You know me. I mean, you know more about the artists than I do. So most of these guys, if they have any controversy, I don't know about it. And I just go in and talk to them about, hey, this looks cool. Tell me about it.
We had one of the most controversial characters in comics on this show. And we talked about collecting comics the whole time, basically, and his work. And so, you know, again, get to know the people and maybe – some of the controversy aren't founded, and yeah. Some of them are. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's a good place to put a pin in it for this week. JD did message me, and his phone did die.
Aww.
Yeah. So.
That's like the third one this month.
Yeah. I think it's that Facebook Live he did. He probably didn't charge his battery afterwards. JD.
Or maybe his phone watched his Facebook Live and decided this was not the way to go.
So next week, JD, make sure you're fully charged before we start. And on that note, boys and girls, as always, thanks for listening. And don't let your cape caught in the door. Have a good week.